First day that I can remember that it wasn't like unbearably hot.
Well, it's been low humidity in the morning since yesterday.
But this is without a doubt the most brutal summer.
It has been fairly pleasant. It's the past couple days.
Pleasant is a little bit of an overstatement. It hasn't been horrifying hell. Like you're not feeling your skin burning off your back. That's an improvement to not feel that way. But
we're surviving.
Yeah. So everybody, let's hope by the time you're hearing this that Heat Dome has passed and moved along.
It's not looking like it's going to end anytime soon.
It doesn't really, does it?
And we're supposed to start outdoor events again like in 2 or 3 weeks because it's September. I got 150 people for Animal Rescue looking to do a
outdoor event with a whole
September,
bunch of dogs
like September 19th, and I'm like, it might not be happening.
Yeah,
I don't see any relief.
Well, on the plus side, the kids are back at school, so you have more traffic too.
Yep.
Man, this year just kind of blows, doesn't it?
And August seems to be. Melissa was saying this morning, August just seems to be dragging on.
Yeah. It's that summertime. It's got its claws in the ground. And it's getting pulled out like some crazy cartoon character. I'm like,
because it's like my daughter's been in school since August 8th or 9th. Seems like it's been forever. We're still in August, dude. Yeah. Shit.
Well.
Oh, I gotta tell you something funny. So Noah knows that I like ironic shirts. So I'm wearing this. I got a chaperone tomorrow for Olivia's football game. Because I finally got a chance where I'm off on Thursday. And the shirt he found, he knows I like ironic t-shirts. So it's the Tabasco sauce logo. It's a mock-up of that. And it says, the top of it says, my life was a total, and then where it says Tabasco, it says fiasco, until I found Jesus.
Nice.
It is so awesome. Dude, who the fuck uses the word fiasco anymore? Seriously, how often do you hear fiasco? It's the funniest shit. So I'll be wearing that shirt tomorrow for the football game.
For high school. Your children.
And the first person that asked me about it, I'm going to say, God, yes. My lawn was in total disarray. It was a fiasco. Until I found Jesus, and he was able to get everything in line.
I had the shirt made in honor of Jesus. People are so touchy these days.
I know.
You know?
So Olivia's very excited that I'm wearing that one. She always wants me to wear my Jesus Loves You, But I Don't Go Fuck Yourself shirt, but that was a little bit too much to wear to school. I'll wear it in Zoom meetings, but that's it.
I love the kind of homemade irony where people take stuff and adjust it. To where, like, if you cut a letter out of something, it says something else, or, you know, that sort of thing. Back in the 90s, there was a local band called Dinosaur Salad. They were just, like, a kind of a heavy punk band that, you know, did the circuit. Well, we have a local radio station that, it's a Christian radio station, like, it's KSBJ. And they'd go to churches and stuff and pass out bumper stickers for free, like, by the thousands. So you had all of these cars driving around in the 90s with these bumper stickers that said, God listens, and then it says, 89.7, whatever. Mm-hmm. Dinosaur Salad went and got a whole bunch of those stickers and taped, glued something, like attached them to where it says, God listens to Dinosaur Salad. But they didn't print their own stickers. They went and modified existing stickers that were made for the radio station. And so you had like 1,000 kids driving around with this bumper sticker. And then, of course, people started putting Slayer on there.
Right.
Different things. But it was hilarious because of the way it was offset with the fonts. You could stick your own sticker on the over the radio thing, and it would just go perfectly on there, and it looked like it was all one piece. It was great.
Well, I don't know if you remember, this reminds me of a story from when I was in high school. I think it was my friend Brandon. You remember they used to, during the Drug Awareness Week, they would give you the little ribbon that said drug-free. That year, it said drug-free, it's the way to be. And then it was, you know, whatever year it was, all sort of shit. So they gave them out to us in, like, homeroom. And my friend Brandon immediately got some scissors and took his. And he made it look so clean, but he took some glue, and all of a sudden his said, druggy, the way to be. And we were all like, do it for me! And so, there were, like, 30 of us walking around with these custom ribbons all day. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, there's a kid in junior high came to school, and I swear to God, he had a new kids on the block pin, like you'd go on your shirt or your backpack, and he stuck it on his blue jeans, and when people would ask him what it was, he was like, it's new kids on the cock. And then everybody started wearing new kids buttons on their pants like that. Like, the unintentional comedy of just kids being clever with stuff is awesome. Speaking of kids, welcome to episode 187. Ooh, that's an ominous letter. That was ominous number combination. Episode 187, entitled Those Damn Kids.
Happy back to school, everybody.
This is September 4th, 2023. The kids are back at school. They're coming home with problems, math and other types. They're wanting to stay up too late, but then they also don't want to get up early and just run amok, right? Like just all over the place. So, but they're also pretty scary in movies and shows and stuff as a horror trope.
Kids can be creepy.
We're gonna visit that here just in a few minutes, but. But first...
First, the old business!
All right. So last week's music and TV and everything was so shitty, I had to go back to 1987. Because 1987 rocked. This week in 1987 wasn't as rocking as some other weeks. But, you know, it's not completely... Anyway, let's see. Top music hits. Not a great week. Coming in at number 5, you had Only in My Dreams by Debbie Gibson. Mm-hmm. You have Luca from Suzanne Vega. Don't Mean Nothing by Richard Marx. Who's That Girl by Madonna. And then La Bamba by Los Lobos. So, you know, kind of a slow week in music, but the kids are going back to school. So, you know, you're not going to have a whole lot of top hits kicking this week. If you got to stay up late enough, you'd get to see Married with Children, MacGyver, Magnum P.I., Punky Brewster, all the old guard that is pretty much still carrying the flag for pop culture, is all those 80s sitcoms and TV shows.
Just you mentioned Magnum P.I. We had a friend in high school that had way too much facial hair for his age. Like, he had like a fucking mustache in ninth grade, and we used to call him Magnum Puyai. Because of South Louisiana. So it was Magnum Puyai was his name for years, dude. Because we couldn't have a beard, but we could have a mustache. So he had this ridiculously thick Tom Selleck mustache at 14.
You remember when your kids and you and your friends or cousins or whatever would start getting into, like, the who would win? Like, my dad could beat up your dad sort of stuff. Or who would win, MacGyver or Spencer for Hire? Like, who, you know, between... like. You know, B.A. Baracus or Clubber Lang.
Right.
You know, they're both Mr. T. Like, who would win if they were fighting? Like, those kinds of things. We used to have that same thing, but I think Magnum... Magnum ended up, like, we'd like, oh, no, Magnum could definitely take MacGyver. Magnum could definitely take Spencer.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't be too hard for him to take down.
I think Michael Knight could take Magnum P.I.
I don't know. He'd have to have help from the car. If you disable the car, then, you know, plus you got that Ferrari.
Colt Seaver could take his ass.
Colt could get him.
He's the unknown stuntman.
But the only reason that they would come to fisticuffs is if they were working that same case, since PI was a private investigator and Colt was a bounty hunter.
If they came to fisticuffs, it would be such a fiasco.
It would be a fiasco. My daughter's been binging The Simpsons for like the last month. She's just been, and for whatever reason, maybe it's just an age thing, but when I was a kid, everything Bart said was the hilarious shit. And then when I was an adult, everything that Homer says is hilarious shit.
It's what you can relate to.
Every time I walk through the room and Mr. Burns is saying something, it just cracks me the hell up. And I've taken on a lot of his vocabulary lately. If you want to go see the movies in September of 1987... Coming in at number 10, Born in East L.A., baby. That was such a fun...
I'll revisit that whenever it was in a while. Psst, psst,
psst, psst. What's happening?
The Living Daylights, James Bond. Hamburger Hill. That was a rough one.
Yeah.
That was one of those...
That was one of the early graphic Vietnam movies.
Yeah. You had everybody trying to... outgrind each other, because so, had, you know, Kubrick doing war movies, and you had the kind of the old John Wayne, the old guard was falling off, and you had the more realistic and gritty Platoon and Oliver Stone, and everybody was just the more violent, the more successful.
Full Metal Jacket's still the GOAT. Just me. Full Metal Jacket's just an amazing movie.
Had The Fourth Protocol, Can't Buy Me Love, La Bamba, The Big Easy. Remember that?
Oh, I remember it well, because I'm thinking of a different movie with Dennis Quaid. But so in The Big Easy, he's at Tipitina's and there's a Zydeco band playing. That's my cousin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's my cousin Terrence playing in that scene. But yeah, I remember that movie was fucking terrible. I grew up in Louisiana. The accents were fucking horrible. Nobody takes a business lunch to eat boiled crawfish.
Right. Because you get dirty.
Because you will get filthy. You won't be able to go back to the office. They'll be able to smell you down the hallway.
And you can't really eat crawfish without beer. Like,
see, there's a lot in that movie that I had issues with.
No Way Out, Dirty Dancing, and Stakeout.
I remember Stakeout. Wasn't that a...
Richard Dreyfuss?
Yes.
It's funny because all the memes... poking, like, as people have grown up and, like, the world has changed, like, the memes taking shots at Dirty Dancing, it's like the whole movie, her dad's kind of the bad guy, and it's like, wait a second, he has a girl that's like the daughter that's like just barely 17.
This is like statutory rape going on.
She's hanging out with this dude that looks like 40.
They're cheering for it.
And the people she's hanging out with are all, you know, getting wasted and doing it and having abortions and stuff. And he's just like, this is a bad thing for you. And they're like, oh, we'll just dance, you know, just dance it off, whatever. You know.
The Fast Times at Ridgemont High effect. You know?
Well, yeah, all those, well, dude, when you watch, that first interaction between Indiana Jones and Marion, she's like 24, 25 now, and it's been 10 years since they saw each other, and when she's like, I was a child, it's been 10 years. It's like, if you do the math, and she was like 14. He's like, you knew what you were getting into. You knew what you were doing, and you're just like, ugh, this is kind of cringy.
It's a different time. It was a different time.
Different times. I realized that they probably didn't have the continuity writers being like, hey, you should probably say 5 years. Maybe not 10. But, you know. Ugh. All right. Well, that is it for the old business. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with the new.
Glorious day.
And the complete breakfast with
Booberry.
Huh? Into the waves, Boo.
Bye-bye. Frankenberry has strawberry-flavored sweeties.
Count Chocula has chocolate sweeties.
And Booberry with berry-flavored sweeties.
And here are the mini monsters. 5 monsters in all. You can trade them with friends and put on a show. 1 mini monster in specially marked boxes of the Monster cereals.
back.
We're back. Yes. We'll jump right into it. Mr. Gomez, if you would.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Hey, so I got a few interesting stories this week. This one, I'm kind of bringing up, and I found it interesting that I saw this headline. This story didn't register a blip on anybody's radar. It is pretty amazing that it didn't. If you look at the fucking headline, I literally found it. You know, Drudge Report is a news aggregate, and I use that to find articles all the time. It was like in the third column, you know, third from the bottom. You know, nothing really significant, but first ever alien objects found on Earth. Harvard physicist Avi Loeb says hundreds of tiny fragments he found at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean are from outside our solar system. They actually found unidentified material that they can't, gas chromatic scans, they have no idea what these materials are. It is definitely from outside our solar system. This is the first time in history material has been found like this. Alien hunting Harvard professor Avi Loeb said early analysis of metal fragments his team recovered from the Pacific Ocean in June suggests they come from interstellar space. The remnants came from a meteor-like object that crashed off the coast of Papua New Guinea in 2014. He's not ruling out that it could have been fragments from an alien aircraft that got lodged into a meteorite that may have hit something. The team found about 700 tiny metallic spheres during an expedition, and the 57 analyzed contained compositions that do not match any natural or man-made alloys. The findings do not yet answer whether the spheres are artificial or natural in origin, which Loeb said is the next question his research aims to answer. But I thought that was interesting that it's like, oh, okay. That's like been the plot of fucking movies.
What gets me is...
It's like finding that manium.
Yeah. Well, what totally gets me that... And a lot of it's probably exacerbated just by the internet being full of idiots that don't know anything. But when you have... anything at all, whether it's people talking contrary to the continuity of a fictional story. So if you start talking about, you know, Professor X going to search for the One Ring, and you'll be like, no, that didn't happen. You'll be like, oh, well, you know, humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Like, no, that didn't happen. But you have people who will sit there and fight over everything. And then the government's being like, hey guys, I think we found aliens. And everybody's just kind of like, meh. It is really the most bizarre, like, reaction, I would think, globally to... I mean, it could be 100% psyops. It could be a complete sleight of hand move on the government to get people's eyes off of wars, right, and different things. But when the government... Like, when the government itself... plays lip service, even without coming out and saying it's a real thing, but just kind of being like, well, it's not exactly false in it, you know? And people are just kind of like, meh, whatever, dude. It's because we've been under so much shit lately that we'll believe anything at this point, or we just don't believe it at all. We're like, nope, they're trying to cover something up, right? But yeah, it's like, oh, we found these things that are completely contrary to anything, and we're publishing it in scientific magazines and scientific journals and mainstream media, and everybody's kind of like,
yeah,
it's a little bit weird. It's kind of, dude, a weird world we're living in.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on. I love this story just because of the things that I'm into. Exclusive. Japan has announced plans to release waste. Remember Fukushima?
Oh, yeah.
Disaster. Japan has announced plans to release waste from the Fukushima nuclear disaster into the Pacific Ocean starting as early as last week, one expert warned the Daily Star of some possible worrying consequences. You think? New plans to dump waste from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant into the ocean could create mutant animals, an expert has hinted. Tokyo Electric Power Company Holdings, otherwise known as TEPCO, are said to start launching treated and diluted wastewater from the 2011 disaster into the Pacific Ocean by August 24th, after Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida gave them the all clear earlier this week. The decision is, of course, a controversial one, which many concern about the untold effects the wastewater could have on marine life and on those of us who are partial to seafood. Godzilla All you gotta do is watch the original Godzilla movie, and you'll know why this is not a good idea at all.
What gets me? All of the pollution and all of, like, obviously there's going to be some, and you can't stop it all and stuff. But like, you've heard that, I don't know if you've ever heard, it's one of those mind blowing facts that like 96 or 7% of all sea life lives within a couple hundred miles of the coast.
Yeah,
because that's where all the food chain is. That's where all the little stuff lives in the other stuff that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. And then you get your giant, like your whales, like your blue whales that eat krill. All that stuff lives near the surface. So there are areas of the ocean that are deep. And more or less just giant deserts where there's no bottom and there's no life anywhere.
Right.
That they could put this stuff and it would probably dilute.
Yeah, by the time it gets anywhere. By the time it
gets dangerous. Right. They're going to freaking go like, just pour it in the water like right off the coast. And people like, why would the fishermen possibly be concerned? It's like, well, let's think about that. You're pouring the water, you're pouring the craft water right into their fisheries.
Right.
That sucks.
So that's a crazy one. Yeah, let me introduce you to 32-year-old Dylan Stone Miller. Now, I know back in my early days, my younger days, occasionally when we needed beer money, we would donate plasma and shit. Okay, I don't know if you've ever participated in that ritual. I've never donated
blood to get beer.
Okay, so yeah, going out, buddy, back in the day, every once in a while, we'd go ahead and drop some plasma. It was, you know, it was good pay, you know. For an hour. Well, Dylan Stone Miller has taken it a step further. He is an incredibly prolific 32-year-old sperm donor. And he has recently embarked on a journey. After through Ancestry.com and Facebook, he has been able to start meeting some of the 96 children that he has fathered through his years of donating sperm. This is the weirdest fucking story I've ever heard in my life. He embarked on a 9,000-mile road trip this summer to start visiting some of the children. So far, he has met 25 of his biological children to the point where he started a Facebook group.
It's a family Facebook group.
Yeah. So his road trip is part of a larger odyssey to figure out how he fits in the lives of the boys and girls he fathered in absentia. It began 3 years ago when he first saw a photo of one of his biological children, a toddler named Harper, who had his blue eyes and his sister's curls. He got tears, he recalled, and unexpected feelings of kinship. I think of her as my first child, he said. He met Harper when she was 3 and decided he wanted to foster relationships with as many of his children as possible, at which point he quit his job as a software engineer and has funded his quest with his savings. This is the weirdest fucking story. But the thing about it is, with, you know, the rise of DNA testing and everything, and what's really scary about this, okay, so this one guy has fathered 96 kids. The tree is starting to wind down. These kids don't know that they have the same dad. What if, you know, 30 of them live in the same town?
Right.
And they're the same fucking age. It's just, it's kind of scary.
I have to wonder, because, you know, you think about places like Appalachia and areas where inbreeding is more prevalent just because, you know, it's a family farm and they live off in the boondocks and there's nothing but cousins. Somewhere along the line, everybody was related at some point.
Yeah, I've been in some towns in East Texas like that.
It's just the way that it is. You know, so you have to wonder, like, with urbanization, it definitely did, you know, deepen the pool, so to speak, because it brought so more people, you know, so many more people around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what happens whenever you do have those kind of anomalies? Because it's like, I think that's back in the day, that's why you had to get blood tests, right? To make sure you weren't family before you got married. And then they did away with the blood tests and, you know, whatever. Now you got guys like this.
So all this started in 2020 when a stranger messaged him, "I really hope you don't feel violated in any way, but it's Canadian Thanksgiving and I wanted to tell you how grateful my family is to you," wrote Alicia Bowes, who was one of the two mothers of Harper. She had tracked him down through social media and using clues from his donor profile, which had his first name and his father's occupation and shit. So she was able to track him down. He opened up her Instagram page and saw the photo. Days later, he asked if he could join a Facebook group called Zytex 5186 Offspring, which was a Facebook group named after his sperm bank ID of people trying to track him down.
He must be a really looking, good-looking dude if the all those women were like, I want that
one. This is just the weirdest fucking story. I wouldn't want to know shit. You know, what's next as far as, you know, what if somebody decides they want to pursue child support or something? Or, you know, it's just a weird, weird story. You know, it's, you can see some greedy-ass lawyers jumping all over that. Well, yeah. You know what I mean? Just weird. Okay. So, let me introduce you now to Dr. Philippe Nietzsche, who has been dubbed pretty much the new Dr. Death and the Elon Musk of assisted suicide. He's recently unveiled a grisly suicide booth that the way it works is you get in the suicide booth, it's a coffin-like pod that you lay down in it. It asks you three questions. I'm trying to find what the questions are that it asks you. It's just the weirdest fucking story. Person climbs in the machine. They'll be asked three questions, and they have to answer it verbally. Who are you? Where are you? And do you know what happens if you press the button? If you answer all those verbally correctly, the software switches on, and the chamber is filled with nitrogen. It lowers the oxygen in the blood, and it will instantly kill you. Yeah. So this is the new... Who was the Dr. Death?
Kevorkian.
Kevorkian. Yeah, so this is the new Kevorkian of a new age. Of course, this isn't in the United States. It's in the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken, or some Eastern European company. But the suicide machine itself looks pretty fucking sharp. That is, like, nice, dude. That is, like, state-of-the-art and shit. And I guess that's why he's being dubbed the Elon Musk of assisted suicide. I don't think he's selling the pods. He's just selling people the right to use them. Or maybe he probably has to sell the pods. Yeah. Actually, it's just because
you got to, you know, like those are pretty rad. You know, you got to service more than one at a time. Before you get off the suicide machine, I probably said it on the show before, but the way my mind works, when Kevorkian started getting famous for having built a suicide machine, Do you know what went through my head? What I thought it was. In my head, I envisioned a contraption similar to like a leg press. And attached to the other end of the leg press, whenever you extended your legs, it would trick basically a guillotine with a sideways blade on it that would come down and like hack your head off. So it's suicide in that you have to physically
start it.
Start, you know, you have to push the button and engage the machine. So it's not an execution machine, it's a suicide machine.
Right.
But you get in there, you know, you sit down, you put your feet on the pad, you hold on to the handles, and hit the butt, you know, push the foot pads, and thunk, and then it retracts, and your head falls in the basket, and they reset for the next...
It wasn't quite that grisly.
I thought that would be, I mean, that's it's like this. I just wrote it because I'm writing like an autobiography sort of stuff, a bunch of essays, because I thought, hey, every time I talk to my uncle or people in my family, people are like, oh, I wonder who, what kind of person your grandfather really was. Nobody really knows. I'm like, oh, I have this ability to leave this legacy for my children. I could tell my life story. And maybe if I publish it and people laugh, then that'll be fun too. But I remember, like, I'd go visit my grandparents. I was like 7, 8 years old, right? When I go visit my grandparents, my grandfather made this, I still make it to this day, but it's like a barbecue marinade that you brush on to your stuff while it's grilling, and it's mostly made out of butter, so every time some drips down into the coals, it flares up. So I was like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, something like that, and I'm like playing with the butter, dripping it off the thing and watching it flare up, and I thought to myself, you know what would be horribly awesome? It's like you fill up a water gun with this stuff, and then you set like a cigarette lighter on the end, then you could squirt fire onto people. So then I go to my grandfather, because he is a war veteran and, like, killed people and stuff. So I was like, I got this wonder. And, of course, he's like, dude. You know, he didn't say dude. He was just like, he informed me that flamethrowers already exist, because people have been trying to throw fire on one another for centuries. But that came to my mind at not as a copycat. Like, that was 100%. Like, I could get one of my Intertech squirt guns, fill it full of this sauce, get my uncle's cigarette lighter, and run around shooting machine gun fireballs at everybody. And that was my invention in my head. You know, it wasn't my fault I was born too late. The suicide machine's kind of grisly, but, you know, you kind of put me in a mindset. I'll fuck up your day.
Okay, we will close with 51-year-old John McKee from Indiana. John McKee was pulled over last Wednesday at about 9 o'clock at night by Indiana State Police Trooper and charged with DUI. The reason he was pulled over is because he was spotted at 9 p.m. driving a blue Power Wheels Jeep without lights or reflectors down the highway. The trooper says McKee looked impaired. He administered field sobriety test, most of which he failed, and McKee agreed to a blood draw at a local hospital. Told cops he had pot and crystal meth in his system. He ended up being released after posting $5,000 bond on a felony rap. His rap sheet includes numerous convictions like trespass, possession of drug paraphernalia, marijuana possession, criminal mischief, and now he has been charged with driving under the influence.
The little Power Wheels?
On a Power Wheels, yes. It is just so awesome.
Did you see
the... It's not a good idea.
I'm sure you saw the girl at the film festival.
with
the cosplay, but she had the Barbie Jeep that she was driving around. That was pretty cool.
That was very, very cool. So that's it for the new businesses.
Rock and roll. We'll listen to these words from our sponsor, and we'll see you in a minute.
Yeah. 13th, an all-new three-dimensional process will put you in the picture, whether you want to be there or not. Friday the 13th, Part 3 in Super 3D. Join Jason in the woods on his day, if you dare. Friday the 13th, Part 3 in Super 3D. Rated R.
All right, and we're back. So
back to school.
Let's do it.
Scary kids.
I was going to say, or if we want to quote Corey Feldman, what up with the youth?
He's got a new banger he's about to drop, by the way. He's got a new song coming out next week, I think.
It's about divorcing his wife in the midst of her health crisis. That didn't get him any fans. Did you read that?
Yeah, he tried to explain it on Instagram, though. I don't hate Sea Dog.
I don't hate the bro. I'm just like, there there is a certain way you announce something, and there's certain details you could probably leave out.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm parting ways with the love of my life because of her ongoing health crisis.
She can't go on tour, so.
Like, that doesn't sound good on you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're like, every time we have sex, her vagina bites me. Yeah, I just can't handle it, and the doctors can't figure it out. Then you're like, okay, well, that's kind of a good cause, you know?
Like, that makes more sense.
But what up with these damn kids? Why are monster movie kids so scary?
It's just the factor of just kids. Kids can be creepy. I mean, because you don't expect kids to do evil shit. You know, kids are supposed to be innocent. You know, they don't have an evil bone in their body yet. It's something that's learned.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids just seem to be born with it.
Well, there's obviously the scary kids, and then there's the different kids that are used in to be put in danger, sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, you could go through the entire Pet Sematary, for example, and that entire concept is horrifying enough. You know, you bury something and it comes back not quite right.
Right. And that's been a trope. Forever. For a long time, yeah. The telltale hand.
But then you put the little kid in there, And he comes back not quite right. And it just...
But he's still the same voice and everything.
It just, I mean, it like, it's just so much worse. Because just any number of zombies are okay. Kids, like, even though the kid... In Dawn of the Dead, when she delivered the zombie baby, Mekhi Phifer was the father. Uh-huh. And, you know, she's been bitten, but she's pregnant, and they're just trying to get the baby out before she turns, and then the baby's born, and it's a zombie. That is probably the most gut-wrenching scene in that entire film. Like, it was just, like, oh my God.
Right.
So, just something about, like you said, it's that warped innocence. It's that they're not supposed to be scary. They're supposed to be all cozy and warm in their beds. Not floating out of windows. Because okay, you name a lot of, especially a lot of Stephen King stuff.
He utilizes kids.
He leans on kids, but it's effective.
Well, one obvious one, which I was going to bring up, are the Grady twins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were creepy as fuck.
But they were trying to help him. That's the thing, though.
But they were still creepy.
Oh, yeah.
The ghost kids are just creepy. Ghost kids are incredibly creepy.
I think it's funny how they have to tell, like in The Shining, because Stanley Kubrick drove Shelley Duvall pretty much mad.
Yeah.
But
he got that performance out of her.
But he basically told the children that they were in a comedy. And to just like, oh, this is a serious part. You have to act very, very serious. And then people are going to laugh when they tell the joke later. So like, you have these little, like the kid that played Danny.
Danny, yeah.
He's all sitting there like, okay, you need to look really, really scared and do this. And then the clown will jump out and make everybody laugh. And he's like, and it's like, holy crap. I mean, can you imagine being on set that day? I mean, they're absolutely mind-fucking these kids. they said the same thing about the twins, the girls that played the Gradys, that they didn't tell them they were in a horror movie. They were just like, oh, you just got to do this. And it's just like a silly, like, flashback scene.
Like Scary Movie. He just is a parody. Don't worry. So, another one that is just chock full of creepy-ass kids, of course. And I refer to Isaac all the time, is Children of the Corn. I mean, that movie just opens fucking brutal.
And you're right, because it is a kind of a Stephen King just sort of rant here, because that's him again.
It's a serious fever dream from Stephen King. Children that was during Corn, that dude, time.
Children of the Corn, I've seen it recently, and I've seen it edited.
It holds up well.
It's still scary.
It holds
I mean,
up
the
really
way
well.
It was filmed, and just the absolute over-the-top insanity of the kids.
Well, like I said, the opening scene... Kids slaughter everybody in the diner.
Mm-hmm.
Brutally. Like, really, really fucking brutally. And that creepy-ass Isaac is just outside looking through the window.
Yeah.
It's a trippy-ass movie, man.
The Salem's Lot, Children of the Corn, that all comes from that same era of Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
Where He Who Walks Behind the Rose, in a short story called Jerusalem's Lot, was He Who Hides Behind the Rose was the thing that lived in the decrepit church.
Okay.
It was like the worm. And it was the catalyst for the events of both Children of the Corn and Salem's Lot. They kind of run together. It's that, even though Children of the Corn's far away, it's that same entity. Excuse me, but reading those short stories, Stephen King books back in the day too, that had Children of the Corn and stuff in it, was like, you could tell, like, he was scared of children.
Oh yeah, children creeped him the fuck out. Now, fun fact that I found researching this, and I have no idea how I'd ever do this, but John Franklin, who played Isaac, dude was 25.
Oh, really?
He was 25 years old playing a 12-year-old kid. Yeah, he suffers from an immune deficiency. And he kind of stunted his growth as a child. He never grew taller than 5 foot tall. But yeah, he was 25 years old when he played that role.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy, man.
There was something in the water in the 80s or in the 70s. Because, you know, you remember you had Different Strokes and Webster. Like
Major Lewis.
Those kids were like, they played kid roles forever because they just never...
They never grew.
They never grew. TV was a lot like Barnum back in the day where it's just like, oh, you're a little bit different.
It's a sideshow, yeah.
Just throw you up on TV.
Okay, and another one of the creepiest kids, just, and it's such an image, is little Damien from The Omen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little lead singer of AC/DC, running out there. He's just an iconic image of a very creepy, scary child. South Park used to parody him all the time.
What's great about him is it is done in so many different. Is how few lines he actually had.
Yeah, he just was creepy.
He's just there.
Yeah.
Just his presence is weird.
And just the score helped so much, and the soundtrack of that movie, he was just straight up
Damien,
evil.
This is for you. Oh, that's that dude. When that rope snaps, like, it doesn't break. You know, like, whenever it snaps taut, it's just oh, how brutal. Popped her head right off.
Okay, another one of my all-time favorites, which I got to bring up, is, and just as a kid watching this movie, it was weird how I kind of connected with this kid where I wished that I had his powers, but watching the movie, it was kind of fucking scary, was Anthony from the Twilight Zone movie. That was a creepy-ass kid. That kid would do some evil fucking shit, dude.
There's more, there's the Twilight Zone episode where they show up to the town and it's all taken, like everybody's gone, mm-hmm. and it's just that one kid that's left. There's one that was very memorable, and he was not quite a kid, he was like a teenager, but it was like this autistic kid that had a clairvoyant powers, but he could bring anything to himself. So like the whole house is just full of like toys and stuff because they give him catalogs, and he'd look at a picture and he'd say bring, and it would like just appear in his room. And it was kind of a almost kind of sweet little family story until the mother died, and then the father like got rid of every photograph that he could, but the kid opened a book and a picture fell out and he saw his mom and he's like, oh, bring, and then like the corpse just appeared in their living room. And it was like, I remember being a little kid being like,
what the fuck?
Because, I mean, as a kid, you're like, dude, I mean, obviously I don't want to be, like, disabled, but to be able to just look at a picture and, like, go on it, like, remember, like Bozo the Clown early in the mornings or whatever TV shows you'd watch when you were a kid, and they'd, like, one of the prizes was a shopping spree and like a Toys R Us, and they'd get a basket and be able to run through and just like
grab as much as you can. Yeah.
I always thought that would be so much fun. I was not in any way underprivileged. I just thought that would be a freaking blast, right?
Right.
But to be able to look at a picture, like we all do it now with Amazon, right? You look at the picture and you're like, bring it. Bring it. What happens when AI fully takes over and you're looking at pictures of your loved ones and you're like, hit it, and they're like, 2-day free delivery? And you're like, oh shit, I forgot I was drunk and sad. I ordered that. They used the claw drone to pull that casket up out of the ground. Then you have the kids that are kind of the heroes, but they're weird in their own right, like Carol Ann.
Yes. Yeah, Carol Ann, just the way she reacted to this shit.
She's so little and innocent.
Wasn't like a usual kid.
Yeah, she's so little and innocent and so cute. But
she was like welcoming to these spirits and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't get scared. She wasn't scared at all until she actually
got
into it. Yeah.
But...
which ended up being her demise. She wasn't cautious. She was just an innocent child, mm-hmm. you know, and she was tricked.
Yeah. Poltergeist still holds up to be one of the scariest.
Absolutely, like, man. It still has jump scares that get me every time.
I'd say there's a lot of underground horror that's obviously a lot more disturbing, but Poltergeist works on a lot of different levels, because if you're a kid, you know what it's like to be in a room that's with a scary tree or something under the bed. As an adult, you worry about your children, you worry about your neighborhood, you worry about all the stuff that could happen to anybody, and then you add in, like, dark evil forces that you don't even really believe in.
Right.
And just like,
and really gross weird shit, like the dude peeling his face off. The steak. You know,
with all the maggots
and everything coming out, and just the slime. That shit was gross as a fucking kid. Dude. So gross.
Yeah, I remember distinctly me and my cousin talking about Poltergeist and being like, okay, I've heard it's scary. Are we going to watch it? We both watched it and we're like, that wasn't that scary. And both of us were kind of like, it was kind of scary.
Okay, so one kid that is insanely creepy, and to me this is such an underrated movie and enough people don't fucking talk about it, is Brightburn. Have you seen Brightburn?
I have not, unfortunately.
Brightburn,
it showed up for just a minute and then it disappeared.
Brightburn is such an excellent movie, and the whole storyline of an evil ass Superman, you know, this is literally a kid who's 14 years old, and realizes that he's a god. He realizes, yeah, I am better than all of you motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. And just takes it to an absolutely extreme level. You know how we always talk about movies that end bad? This is a movie that ends really fucking bad.
Like, he's just never good.
Yeah, yeah. There's no happy ending in Brightburn. It's an excellent movie, and that kid just does so well. The actor that stars in it, in playing that role.
We're going to have to revive the Fresh Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
We might have to come up with have you ever seen it? Like, what was it? You haven't seen that podcast? Or it's like, how have you not seen that?
Yeah.
Now, they're talking about shit like RoboCop and Die Hard.
Right, some pretty big movies, yeah.
Brightburn was a sleeper, and I wanted to see it, and then it kind of fell off, and I never revisited. But that's one that I'm like, oh shit, maybe I should watch it and we should revisit the subject.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Because the evil Superman thing, they do it really well in The Boys. Have you seen The Boys?
Yes, they do well in The Boys. It wasn't that there was a run where Superman had got tricked into being evil.
Well, the I read, because they had multiple series, but the original Injustice series of DC Comics, the creators of Mortal Kombat made a game called Injustice, and it was a fighting game, and it pitted all of the heroes and villains against each other in combat like Mortal Kombat. And it was it was violent.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like cartoon superheroes. It was, you know, like Mortal Kombat
right.
style gritty violence. And so they wrote a story around it, because the ultimate, like, in boss is Superman, because he's the most powerful in the DC Comics universe, right?
Right.
So it wasn't that he got tricked into being evil. It was in this particular universe, the Joker planted a trigger for a nuclear bomb on Lois Lane, and then put the nuclear bomb in Metropolis, and then used Scarecrow shit to make Superman think that Lois Lane was an enemy. Like, make him think it was Doomsday, I think. So Superman flies Doomsday up into the into space to fight him, but it's Lois Lane, so she dies, and when mm-hmm. she dies, it blows up the city and it snaps Superman's brain, because he lost everybody. So when he comes back, when he comes back down, he kills the Joker and he goes on a cleansing spree. And he starts killing off all the supervillains. And he turns into basically the Superman. He turns into the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the rest of the superheroes and a lot of the supervillains are teaming up to try to take him down because he's just gone off the rails. So there's entirely new lines drawn. You've got the ones that are supporting Superman in his crusade, and then you've got the ones that are opposing him.
Because of what he did.
Because of what he did. His primary opposition is obviously Batman. Wonder Woman's on Superman's side, you know, and it sets up this entire line of combat between all of these characters that's random and people switch sides throughout the whole series. Mm-hmm. It's really well written. It's freaking awesome. It's certainly memorable because I read it like 5 or 6 years ago and I'm still like, yeah!
Right.
But the problem with that was that at the end, Superman had to lose because whoever beat him at the end of the game, but you had to power up, you had to charge up your characters over time, mm-hmm. and the only one that could charge up enough to defeat end boss Superman was Superman himself. So they wrote that into the story. So, like, you could charge up Shazam and then get to the end, and you might be able to beat him. But you couldn't do it with a whole lot of characters, and you had to do it.
Right.
And so they wrote that into the story. The Boys, at least Superman has a weakness.
Yeah.
Like, the character in The Boys, Homelander, doesn't have a weakness that they know of. Like, he doesn't get hurt. And the same thing with Invincible. Like, he's got no...
But see, that's how Brightburn is. You know, there's no kryptonite in Brightburn. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just a bad motherfucker. And I think what I think separates it is, like, even if you go back to Watchmen and Adrian Asmodeus, you know, he ends up getting this god complex all of a sudden. And, you know, they got to a point where they just got jaded and just said, fuck it, we don't care anymore. The comedian was probably always a little jaded, but... with Brightburn, this little kid was never good.
Mm-hmm.
He had never even found himself yet.
He's just a bad seed.
And then all of a sudden, he's still trying to find himself, still trying to understand who he is. He never had a chance to be good. He just immediately fucking went to bad. And once he realized, and once it got to the point where he realized he had these powers, and he realized that his parents had hid something from him, or who he thought was his parents hid something from him, that was a wrap. He was like, fuck it, I'm better than you people. Why am I even bothering with you? You can't tell me what to do because I am more powerful than you. You can't fuck around with me. And just the movie just goes off the rails, dude. And I wish, because the way it was planned is James Gunn was going to do a series of evil superheroes. Because like at the end of Brightburn, they tease, there's like this Alex Jones type character that they show doing a monologue. And it's played by Michael Rooker. And he's talking about, you know, this happened and, you know, the evil Superman was there and this happened and there was like, they teased the evil Wonder Woman and the evil Aquaman and they teased all this shit and they never came out with the rest of the movies or anything. And I think just because Brightburn is just an incredibly underrated movie.
I think I'll watch that tonight.
It's a really, really good flick, man.
Have you seen Guardians 3?
No.
James Gunn, I love him, but holy hell, bro. The first two Guardians movies were fun. Like, there's a lot at stake because of the whole Infinity War, but it was fun as, you know, like, yay! You know, all kinds of crazy murder, like Rocket and Groot are like machine gunning shit in a slow motion spin, you know? Yeah. Like, people are obviously dying, but it's not... Guardians 3, Gunn just drops the emotional bombs on you like every 4 seconds.
He's getting ready for that dark DC.
He's just like, holy shit.
Period, dude. He's about to go through.
Oh, man.
Fuck Marvel, we're going dark now. So where do you want to go next?
I was going to say, you've seen Village of the Damned.
Yes.
Everybody's seen Village of the Damned.
Both. The original and the remake.
I don't think... The Village of the Damned could ever be as scary as this kid in, like, sixth grade telling me about it. Talking about how these all kids with the weird glowing eyes...
Yeah, like, the eyes would get you, like, man.
Just townspeople and stuff. And I remember him telling me about it and just being like, I don't want to watch that. That's going to give me nightmares. And then I saw it later, like, on Sin Gully or something and was like, oh, Like, it's creepy, but it's certainly not as bad as I was, like... It's kind of like whenever somebody, like, gets off a roller coaster and they're like, it's so scary! And you're like, oh, shit. And then you get on it and you're like, yeah, that wasn't so bad. You know? but those kids, I mean, they were creepy as hell.
Oh, absolutely, man. And, of course, we can't... We got to talk about one of the creepiest kids who she... You know, it's hard, being that she's done, like, a lot of movies afterwards... It's hard to think of Linda Blair as being a child actress, but just Reagan in The Exorcist. You know, it was a possessed child that threw a projectile vomit on people and stuff and did some really, really crazy shit, man. That was a scary kid.
She was. I can say that, you know, Exorcist was another one of those that was very hyped up before I ever saw it. And when I saw it, it was scary. It just, it like totally didn't live up to what everybody, like, oh, this is Lucifer. Oh my God, people had a heart attack. Like, there's a lot of shit that's a lot more scary than The Exorcist to me. And it doesn't necessarily need to be bloodier or more violent, but just like, just more frightening. Now, to be fair, and let me interrupt myself in the same way. So I was going to say, to be fair, I'm not Catholic. So we growing up, we didn't have a whole lot of like exorcisms in our conversations and lore. It was something that those folks over there did. That said, my grandparents and the church that I went to, they were very, like devils and demons and all that shit was very much real. And so, like, they didn't want us listening to rock and roll because there might be devils in those words, right? So it was just kind of like this dichotomy of like, these things are real and they're not to be messed with, but they're also not somebody to be like going and yelling at if you encounter them. Like, don't be trying to exorcise demons
because right,
they'll fuck you up. But yeah, I mean, I think the first time I ever saw The Exorcist was at my friend Chris's house. He's like, oh, dude, it's the scariest movie in the world. And I watched it, and I was kind of like, meh. Like, didn't, I mean, it was scary. I mean.
Well, was it groundbreaking?
But she was the scariest part of it.
Yeah.
And not because of her special effects, it was really because of her acting. Yeah. It was her voice and the way she said stuff and her kind of just natural movements that, you know, I need to revisit The Exorcist as well. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that's occurring to me. I'm like, oh, you know.
There's a few movies I need to revisit. And I was thinking the other day, I need to revisit Amityville 2, which was my favorite of the series. I love that movie. Okay, so another one that isn't talked about as often as it should be, in my opinion, because it was... The dude is just such an incredible actor. He was just such an incredible child actor. And he normally gets pigeonholed in this one role that he did. But Henry Evans from The Good Son, portrayed by Macaulay Culkin, was a little shit. He was a little piece of shit, dude.
Dude. He really was. That was an unexpected movie. I remember that. Because, I mean, he was... He was bad. You only ever knew him as Kevin, who was mischievously bad. Like, all the stuff that Kevin did to the to the wet bandits was pretty deadly.
But it made you laugh.
It
was slapstick.
In The Good Son, he was doing equally conniving things that were just not as funny.
His reasons for doing it was a lot different.
Well, yeah, I just mean... It started making you look over your shoulder...
Okay, so I got one that you might not remember. Another movie you may want to revisit. Do you remember The Pit from 1981?
The Pit.
Yes.
Not the gate. Not the gate where the kid like was listening to heavy metal and bites his friend with a real bite and it looks pretty scary.
Talking about The Pit.
Okay.
So The Pit is a movie I highly recommend you revisit. Me and Andy were talking about this movie about 2 or 3 years ago, and I hadn't watched it since I was a kid. And he was like, dude, you gotta watch this movie, because we didn't realize as kids how much of a fucking little piece of shit pervert this kid was in this movie. Okay, so the pit revolves around this young man named Jamie Benjamin, 12-year-old boy. He has to go live with his grandparents in Wisconsin. He's a recluse. His only friend is a teddy bear named Teddy. Not very inventive, but him and Teddy talk to each other. Teddy's an evil motherfucker. And what Benjamin starts doing is he suddenly gets this obsession with women, especially his babysitter. And he just becomes perverted, and he starts lusting out. He steals her panties, just all kind of weird shit. And during this whole time, what the teddy bear is having him do is he's having to take people. Like, on the back of the property, there's a pit. He brings people back there to trick them into falling into the pit, where these demons that he calls trogs eat on them. They have to eat raw meat. And he's just killing all these people. It's just this wild fucking movie.
I do remember
him and
this
teddy bear are just... That is from the VHS tape from back in the day. But him and that teddy bear are just two evil, evil ass people. That movie is another underrated gem that doesn't get talked about nearly enough.
Yes, I do remember that one now. Now that you mention it, there was a lot of stuff that was just on cable.
Yeah.
Just free for anybody to watch. If you had time and it, you know, the cable hookup and the mom that wasn't paying attention, there's all kinds of crazy shit. But yeah, I remember that with the teddy bear in the hole. Jesus.
It's a throwback, eh? Yeah, it's a fucking deep cut, son. And you can find it streaming all over the place, which is really crazy, man. The Gate's streaming for free right now, Tubi, by the way.
Yeah, the Gate was one of those that... I think, did we do a Fresh Eyes on that one, or did that one just come up?
No, we didn't. We just talked about it one time.
I had remembered that...
Young Stephen Dorff.
I remember that being a scary movie from when I was a kid. Yeah. Like...
Oh, it was a satanic panic.
Well, it was a satanic panic, but it was also very much like there were a lot of horror branded movies that were just kind of adventure movies with a little bit of a scary element. And then there were some other things that were just like from the ground up horror. The Gate was one of those that was kind of looked like a Goonies or an Explorers or just a snarky...
The Critters.
Like we talked about our 80s movie checklist.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like, especially even with the little demons, it looked like a...
it would be a campy movie.
It was like a little... Yeah, like Meatballs 2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of sold it in that like kid, snarky kid romp sort of thing. But then whenever he actually gets into it and their home's being invaded by demons... And they shapeshift, and they're becoming possessed in different ways, and music sounding different, and like everything's just freaking wrong,
right?
Because of this tree that came down in their backyard, and it's just like, it just that was a frightening movie, and that I had kind of forgotten about. But to revisit, it's like casually scary, or it's intentionally dark. And scary, but it doesn't seem such until you're actually in it. And then you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This was not what I realized it was going to be.
Okay, so here's another one that I'll bring up. It's another one. Doesn't get talked about enough because it's a sequel. And the original movie did a lot better. But Ben. The little motherfucker that Danny has his rats. No, Willard was Crispin Glover. Ben was the sequel from 1972 from the original Willard, where there was a young man by the name of Danny, who Ben was the rat that was Willard's main rat. Well, after the end of Willard, he got away, and this kid named Ben found him.
That's right.
A little 12-year-old kid. Michael Jackson did the theme song
for Ben, yeah, right.
Which is the scariest part of that movie, to be honest with you. But so that little kid, just his whole rat army. And what's trippy about that movie is, you know, his rat army, like, kills everybody. And they finally figure out what's going on. And it's killing all his bullies and everything else. And they finally think they put a stop to the rats. And he starts it all over again at the end of the movie where he finds Ben and Ben's injured. And he's like, oh, Ben, you're my only friend. And then he takes him away and starts fucking feeding him again. You know, that kid had some serious issues. But yeah, Ben is that sequel to Willard that a lot of people don't talk about too often. 1972, that's an old-ass movie, dude.
Was Ben?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Ben was 1972. Willard was 1971.
Oh, so they were just like
back to back,
right on it.
Yeah, well, Willard ended up doing great. I mean, it was a box office hit and everything, so they jumped on Ben pretty quick. And then Crispin Glover had his turn at it.
I mean,
which he was actually perfect as Willard.
Just so he's a strange dude.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat, that's for sure.
I mean, I've always liked him. It's kind of like with Corey. It's just like, I like the dude and I understand, but you can't just go out and do weird shit and say weird shit and not have people say you're weird. Crispin Glover does that, and so does Corey. You dance like Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's the only person on the planet that's ever danced like Michael Jackson, except for Corey Feldman. And Corey Feldman looks like he's dancing like Michael Jackson. And nobody ever told him, like, bro, I realize you were taught by the man, but this isn't jujitsu.
He borrowed the costumes and everything, yeah. Too. I made Olivia watch the original Willard. And I'm sure you've seen SpongeBob before. And we're watching it. And, of course, Ernest Borgnine is in the original Willard. And I told Olivia, can you guess who that guy is? You know that guy. And he finally gets to a point where he's talking a little bit. And she goes, is that Mermaid Man? And I'm like, yes, that is Mermaid Man when he was younger. Right there in this damn movie.
He's also the cab driver. Everybody moved out of New York and he just stayed. He's driving his cab.
Rest in peace, Mr. Ernest Borgnine. He was just in so much shit.
Man, you could really make a living as an actor back in the days without actually being famous.
Oh, absolutely.
Just being in TV and commercials and just being reliable and on time and, you know, you could, and then, like, what's his name? Is it Daniel Wong? Daniel or David Wong.
David Wong sounds familiar.
He was in,
Victor Crowley?
No, he in Big Trouble in Little China. He was in.
Yes.
He's like 100 years old, and he's like got like several hundred IMDb credits.
Yes, yeah, he was in Balls of Fury. He's been in fucking everything. And I'm gonna pull wrong one. I'm gonna find him right now. James Hong.
There he is. I mean, he was in Seinfeld.
He's been in everything.
Like, he's been in everything. He was in Ninja 3, The Domination.
Oh, dude, he was
the exorcist in Ninja 3.
I've been on, MeTV, watching, like, old reruns of fucking Wonder Woman and shit.
Yeah.
And he pops up.
Oh, yeah. Dude, what's crazy, Wonder Woman is a pop culture, like, launching pad for so many actors. People. Well, when Juliet was little, we used to watch that on. It was like came on like Saturday night, like 5 or 6 o'clock. So it was like right after her bath and before bed. And we sit there and watch Wonder Woman, and just like the revolving cast members, like, oh, that was the guy from Benson. Oh, that was the guy from, you know, Star Trek. Ah, that was who was on there? There were so many.
This is going to blow you away. So James Hong has 452 IMDb credits.
Hell yeah.
Between voice acting and just everything else that he's done.
He's in his 90s now.
Yeah,
and he's still working.
Well, in 2020 he stopped any major projects, but apparently he does have some stuff that's coming out. Yeah. Yeah, that's insane, dude. 454 acting credits. And dude, he's voiced so much shit. So many cartoons, but he's so recognizable. He's been in so... Jesus, he's been in a lot of shit. There's a Seinfeld appearance right there.
Yep.
But yeah, I remember seeing him pop up in Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, look at this shit. He's fucking everywhere.
Yeah, he's... He's cool, dude. And he's been he's been in big box office movies and low budget side projects and sitcoms and everything.
He's been going since his first IMDb credit is 1954. Yeah. Yeah, he's been going for a long ass time, dude. Yeah, Wonder Woman. Here's it is right here. His Wonder Woman credit from 1977. That is nuts, dude. Good old James Hong. Did he do an appearance the other day at a convention?
Probably.
He did a recent convention appearance earlier this year. So
he's an awesome dude.
Oh yeah, he was in Revenge of the Nerds. I think that's what it was, where they had that Revenge of the Nerds cast thing. I think he was there also because he was in Revenge of the Nerds too.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in fucking everything, dude. That is crazy, man. Little James Hong. Alrighty. Got any more you want to go with?
Man, I ran out a little while ago. I'm going to say, man, those damn kids that keep me from like writing my podcast notes and all kinds of stuff. I had to walk down the street.
Kids make horror movies a little bit more creepy. Whether they're victims or the evil pieces of shit that are going after people. Because I've told you before, the horror movies that usually get me emotionally the most are where a kid gets hurt. You know, that's the ones that fucking... That's when I was so pissed off when they made mm-hmm. The Mist, because I've read that story a million times. No kids died, man. Oh. And when I'm watching the movie, in the end of the movie, the dude...
Kills
shoots everybody in the car, including his son. That fuck would be bad, dude.
The last one that I did want to bring up, and I'd forgotten about it, was the movie Sinister.
Yes.
To this day, one of the scariest movies that I've ever seen.
Especially modern movies.
And it's not, I mean, some of those film deaths are quite, but they're not, it's not overly bloody or disgusting. It's just, the concept's frightening. But just talking about it right now is, you know, spoiler, basically, it's got a lot to do with the kids.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. The first time I ever, whenever I first saw that movie, my sister and I went to see it, my sister Chrissy, and we didn't know what we were in for. We'd heard it was good, and we'd heard it was scary. But that was the only thing we knew. And went and watched that film. So watched the movie. Obviously, much more frightening than we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. Which was a good thing. We went to watch a scary movie, so it wasn't like it was a bad thing.
Right.
But it was something that definitely was on your mind after the movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't just popcorn where you could just be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I was like, still like, man, that was a thinker.
That affected me. Yeah.
And so I got home and I went to bed, took a shower, went to bed, all the things. My daughter was like 2 or 3. I'm going to say probably closer to like 2. And I do not know why I left the hall light on. But I got home, went to bed, went to sleep. Took me a minute to go to sleep because I was thinking about that damn movie. And it's frightening. It's one of those, I don't care how big of a horror movie fan you are. It's that same thing of, people being like, I just drank 7 beers and I'm not drunk. It's like, well, no, you were drinking for a reason. You went to see a scary movie. If you're not scared, then you waste
your money.
You weren't
drinking because it tasted good.
Sitting there being like, oh, la, la, go to sleep. Guess what I wake up to? Ka-slam! My bedroom door is rocking on its hinges, and my 2-year-old daughter is standing against the hall light, and she's sleepwalking. So her head's down, and her hair's hanging in her eyes, and she's just kind of slumped down like the ring girl. And
Samara.
Dude, I hit the fucking wall. I jumped out of that bed and I scrambled like a cartoon character and I fell off the edge and I hit the other side and screamed while I was doing it. My wife wakes up and she's like, obviously the child is sad or upset. There's a reason she's at our door. She doesn't do that. And I just squealed and ran away.
Fuck the kids.
Turn off that light.
I know how this movie ends.
Yeah, it's no good. They're gonna bury me and roll over my head with a lawnmower. That sucks.
The Sinister's a really, really great movie.
the one where they had the kills in Sinister, like the everybody's on sitting at the on the pool chairs, and it like yanks them into there, yeah. And like drags them to the bottom. It's like
it just by the end of that movie where Ethan Hawke's sitting in the attic and all the kids are around him. Uh-huh. It's just such a creepy fucking movie.
Uh-huh. He's just like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Like they're all there. It's time. Yeah, that one really, really set Ethan Hawke as the Scream King.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie's so fucking good. And then Black Phone just like elevated him so much.
I hope he's staging up a comeback. You know? No, seriously, like a legit.
Ethan Hawke is amazing. He's such a good actor, dude.
He really
is. Have you seen Black Phone?
I haven't yet.
It's on Prime. I highly recommend it.
I need to.
And Black Phone's a really, really good movie. He's so good in that one. Do you want to talk about creepy? I mean, he's really fucking psychotic in that one. He plays such a good psychopath. It's definitely a good one. And it all involves kids, too.
So, nice. Well, I think we'll leave with that one. Yes. Then I have some homework.
Yes. The Cocaine Bear is also streaming on Prime right now.
Too. All right. Right on, guys. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode. We will see you next week. And you and I have some things to talk about off the air here in a second about some scheduling. Okay. So, hey, everybody. See you next time. Keep it scary.
Later.